just had five different judges, and since it got pushed back and forth, there are six sessions. So that's impossible to cover in one Sunday, but something is better than nothing. And every year when we have Easter, of course, that's a resurrection topic. And if you don't start a little bit early, you don't have anything else about his final last week. Even now, as we turn to John 18, this part of John 18 is already after the Last Supper, after the Garden of Gethsemane, after his arrest, of course. So we've already left out things because we're studying Genesis, but I think it is best not to wait just till Easter Sunday and only do resurrection. So we'll look at John 18 and we'll have, as much as time permits, part of his trial. So John 18, Annas, father-in-law to Caiaphas, part of the trial. We'll look at verse 12. And what is happening here in this narrative? You're doing Peter and the rooster crowing back and forth, back and forth. So we're going to have to leave out Peter and the rooster crowing. Now, they're interwoven back and forth because they're in the same place. They're at the high priest's house. So John 18, 12. So the Roman cohort and the commander and the officers of the Jews arrested Jesus and bound him and led him to Annas first, for he was father-in-law of Caiaphas, who was high priest that year. Now Caiaphas was the one who advised the Jews that it was expedient for one man to die on behalf of the people. And John writes about Peter and denials, but we'll go around that and we'll look at verse 19. Then the high priest then questioned Jesus about his disciples and about his teaching. Jesus answered him, I have spoken openly, we'd say publicly, to the world, and I have always taught in the synagogues and in the temple where all the Jews come together, and I spoke nothing in secret. Why do you question me? Question those who have heard what I spoke to them. These know what I have said. When he had said this, one of the officers standing nearby struck Jesus, saying, is that the way you answer the high priest? Jesus answered him, if I have spoken wrongly, testify of the wrong. But if rightly, why do you strike me? And then just verse 24, Annas, the father-in-law, sent him bound to Caiaphas, the high priest. That's his son-in-law. Back to verse 12, we have the word cohort. We don't use that too often outside of Bible studies. We're more familiar with a legion. Roman legions had 6,000. Cohort had one-tenth, 600. I bring this in because when we think of the arresting party in the middle of the night coming to get Jesus, it wasn't two or three of them. We don't exactly know how many, but the leader of the group had 600 soldiers at his command, and those are just the Romans, not counting the Jewish temple police. So I don't know how large the arresting party was, but larger than we might commonly think. A couple hundred at least, coming out with torches and coming out with their weapons to get him. So they arrest him, and you know, Peter's in the other part of the story that we have to leave out. He cut off the high priest servant's ear, Malchus, he's named in Mark. Peter had nerve. There were hundreds of them coming. Yeah. So when he cut off the ear, it was not just a few of them there. He charging against a whole lot of them. And then ran off, and Peter went to the house. Jesus put the ear back on. And it says in the other Gospels, when they arrested him, some of the soldiers fell over. And I think that has to do either rumors or he saw where the centurion at the cross said, truly, this man was the Son of God. He'd see Jesus on the cross, but he at very least knew about that when people tried to arrest him, they fell over, and he's putting ears back on people. So they take him, a larger than we think, a larger group, and they bring him to Annas, the high priest. Now, just like we might say President Carter and President Obama and President Bush and Trump, they're not in office, but they keep the title. Well, he's high priest. We'd say retired. Son-in-law is actually doing it, but they still call him the high priest correctly. And it says that Caiaphas, son-in-law, had already decided that Jesus should be killed. That's in this narrative back in chapter 11 where they come to the high priest and say, what are we going to do? This man does many miracles. If we leave him alone, all people will come and believe on him. And the Romans will come and take away our place, we'd say our positions, and our nation. And he says, don't you know anything at all? It's better for one man to die than the whole nation to perish. So Caiaphas had already decided what he was going to do. Full quote is interesting because Jesus' enemies said he could do miracles. That's always important to remember. You know, how do you know Jesus did miracles? Well, of course, his disciples were trustworthy and honest, but he did them publicly, so everybody saw them, and his enemies said he could do miracles. He was doing too many and getting too popular. But his enemies said he could do miracles. They just said he did it by the power of Beelzebul, prince of demons. So, did Jesus do miracles? Well, everybody knew it, even his enemies. And they said, we have to kill him because he's getting too popular because he does miracles. So they brought him to, say, father-in-law. And coming to review verse 19, still the high priest. And he's asking him in verse 20 about secret teachings. You know, secret teachings. You said some things publicly, but you must be secretly an insurrectionist. And so we want to know what your secret teachings are. And Jesus is basically saying, same goals in private as in public, nothing different. But verse 21 is always a great application. Very good for us this morning. Question those who have heard what I spoke to them. These know what I have said. In other words, he wasn't going to give a full defense. He was going to say, these followers of mine, ask them what I teach. We're not studying Revelation today, but in Revelation 14, at the end time events, God will send an angel to give the gospel out in the heavens. You know, the world is ending, and he sends an angel to give the gospel. Well, not now. Who gives the gospel now? We do. And Jesus is on trial. People have to decide what they think of him. And for an application, he's actually doing the same thing. He's not talking with a loudspeaker. He's not sending angels through the heaven. He's saying the same thing now he said on his trial, ask those that follow me. Ask those who follow me what I teach. So this is the time for us to defend Jesus. This is the time for us to say what he taught and tell other people. He's not doing it supernaturally yet with angels flying through heaven. He's saying, ask my followers what I taught. Same thing now. Verse 23 basically said also, you're wrong to judge me. So true enough, in Isaiah 53, he did not put up a full defense. But like we studied Joseph last week, Joseph said, I didn't do this. To be in prison. And Paul, the book of Acts, will say, why did you hit me? And you have that here, verse 23. True, he didn't give a full defense. He could have called the angels and been free. True, he didn't give a full defense. But he didn't. He did give a not guilty plea. I didn't do anything. So that was the right thing. Now, what's happening is we're going back and forth in the narrative, and they sent him to Caiaphas, and we don't have Caiaphas' words here. We're going to go directly to Pilate. So if you might keep a finger or a note here in John 18, let's look at Caiaphas' talk, and let's use the Luke account, the close of Luke 22. Luke 22 is a long chapter, and we'll take it up right at the end. We've gone from the father-in-law, now we're doing son-in-law, Caiaphas. By the way, while you're finding verse 66, Annas is mentioned in Josephus, so he is a historical figure mentioned outside the Bible. So will be Caiaphas. I'll try to bring that in a minute or two. But let's look at verse 66 about Jesus' trial. It was day, the council of the elders of the people assembled, both chief priests and scribes. They led him away to their council chamber, saying, "If you are the Christos, Mashiach, Messiah in Hebrew, tell us." But he said to them, "If I tell you, will not believe, and if I ask a question, you will not answer." Now, verse 69, red letter, Jesus talking, from now on, the Son of Man will be seated at the right hand of the power of God. And they all said, "Are you the Son of God then?" And he said to them, "Yes, I am." Then they say, "What further need do we have of testimony? If we have heard it from ourselves, from his own mouth." Now, verse 66 will say when it is day, but when we go back to John, it will say that the trial with Pilate was all over at the sixth hour. So, a new day, but very early in the morning. Everybody's a little different. I grew up on a farm, so I still get up at 4:30. Just all the way through. Just get up early, go to bed early, but get up early. So they bring Jesus to the temple, and he's in what we call a court, and it's a new day, but it's still very, very early because all these proceedings are over with at 6 o'clock in the morning. So we would say it's a new day, but it's still very, very early. And Caiaphas is leaving his house. That's where Peter denied in the rooster. Bring him over to the temple. You really are supposed to have trials in a court building. You're not supposed to have trials in the middle of the night either. This one was in the middle of the night, whichever way you look at it. I mean, it makes sense that you can't have Roman government and American government can't have a trial in the middle of the night. You know how that would be? Here you're trying to make judgment, and it's like, it's 3:30. It's time to go home. Let's just kill them and get it over with. Well, that's what they wanted to do. So they have it all in the house, which is illegal. They drag them over the temple, a royal stoa. Think of all these pillars. That's where the courthouse was. And they're sort of redoing it. But Elvis is fast. All these trials were just fast. It may be a few more minutes than it takes to read it, but just fast. So they take them out of the house. You're not supposed to have trials in the house in the middle of the night. Drag them over to the temple. And the elders, there were 70. Moses had 70 followers, and so the Sanhedrin had 70 people. And they drag him over here. If you are the Christos, the anointed one, Messiah is Hebrew, Christ is Greek. That means anointed one. If you are the anointed one, tell us. Well, who are the us? Well, there were people they left out. Nicodemus was a believer, and he was what we'd call a senator. They left him out. Joseph of Arimathea was a believer. He's what they call a senator. They left him out. Gamaliel was likely never a believer, but he was fair from the book of Acts. And the Talmud calls him a rabban. We're used to rabbi, but a rabban is like, hardly any of them are called that. Gamaliel's like way up here in the book of Acts, and at this time, he's not invited. Just a select people in the house, in the night, well, now the rooster crowed. We can go over to the temple and, supposed to do it in the courthouse. So they just get here and probably about this long. If you be the Christ, and Jesus answered in verse 69, but from now on the Son of Man will be seated at the right hand of the power of God. Every once in a while there's a liberal who will say, Jesus didn't claim anything. He said, I'm only human. I'm just the Son of Man. Well, anybody now, and especially all of them then, knew that this is a quote out of Daniel chapter 7. They all knew it. We've read the Bible before. We know it. It's not just claiming I'm only human. Boy, when liberals make that claim, it just shows me they don't know anything. They'll say they're Bible experts, but Son of Man comes out of Daniel chapter 7, and the Son of Man stands before the Ancient of Days on his throne, and God gives him an everlasting kingdom that will never end. And he can rule all people and tribes and languages. And the chief priest, listening to the claim and the quotation, I'm the Son of Man, they're going to immediately think of Daniel chapter 7. He's not saying I'm only human. He's saying I am the one to whom God will give world power forever. And we did make it down into English, the phrase, a right-hand man. Well, he's going to co-rule with God. They knew exactly what he's saying. Then they asked the next question, are you the Son of God then? And he says to them, yes, I am. I almost wish I had a Greek New Testament here and read the whole sentence, but the answer is ego me. And me as I am, we don't know that, but we know ego comes down to psychology, self, but it was a Greek word long before it came down to psychology, and to say ego and me means me. I certainly am the Son of God. I absolutely am the Son of God. So when we think of the word ego, we think of selfish attention to self, but it originally means self. And here in a positive sense, who are you? Ego or me, I certainly am the Son of God. And they understood, based upon his previous teachings, that he wasn't just saying, God is my creator, and I'm one of the kids. He wasn't saying that. He was saying, like Father, like Son. In John chapter 5, I forget the verse, it's, he called the Father his own Father. Idios, we get idiosyncrasy from it. He is the Father in a unique sense. Jesus is the Son in a unique sense. He is the only begotten. He's the only Son of God in that sense. And these people understood his claim totally right. Ripped his high priest's robes. Now, that's in Matthew and Mark, and not here in Luke. But I picked Luke on purpose because of the emphasis. Yes, I am. But the person breaking the law of Moses here would be the high priest. In Leviticus 21, the high priest is not supposed to tear the robes. So he was breaking the law of Moses himself right here. And there aren't any criminal claims. The reason they wanted to try him is he said he's the Son of God. So come back with me to John chapter 18, for he gets brought back to Pilate. One of the things, and you see there's like, see how many notes I'm throwing away? Coming back to John chapter 18, and we'll look at before Pilate, and that's verse 28. And they led Jesus from Caiaphas into the Praetorium, and it was early. and they themselves did not enter into the praetorium so that they would not be defiled, but might eat the Passover. All right, so he says he's the Son of God. That's the real trial, because the real charge, because the witnesses were inconsistent, and then one said one thing, and the other said the other thing, and they said, "You destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up." Well, he was talking figuratively of the temple of his body. "You kill me, and I'll be raised in 3 days." But even if you took it literally, it was all hypothetical. If you were to destroy this temple, I could rebuild it. So anyway, it's interpreted as not a crime. And the real charge is, he says he's the Son of God. That's what makes him mad. But the Romans took away from the Jews the power of the death penalty. They could try other things, but if they want a death penalty, they got to get the Romans' approval to it. I think of Pilate here, as we look at verse 28. Pilate lived in Caesarea by the beach. He didn't live in Jerusalem. He was over there for the holiday. All right, so he's on a holiday. This is his day off. And they're there at 5 o'clock in the morning, waking him up. And then they say, "Your house is too nasty. I can't go in there. You have to come outside." And there's more on Pilate, but they didn't get along real well. So, we can't go in your house. Can't give a sermon on this, but why would not Jews go into a Gentile house? We repeat it, and we know it here, but it's not very well known. The real thought is, pagans do abortions. Might be a place where they have killed someone. They're not going in there. When we read this, we commonly think they were elitists, and they kind of were anyway. But the real thought is, I'm not going in the Gentiles' houses because they do abortions. Strike Bilderbach, 1924, Munich, Talmud experts. So why wouldn't they go into the Gentile houses? Very contemporary reason. Anyway, we see in the part that I cannot read in verse 29 and following, what are the accusations? Well, we want to put him to death, and we need your approval to put him to death. And so let's pick up reading at verse 33. For Pilate entered again into the praetorium and summoned Jesus and said to him, "Are you the King of the Jews?" Jesus answered, "Are you saying this of your own initiative, or did others tell you about me?" Pilate answered, "I am not a Jew, am I? Your own nation, the chief priests, delivered you to me. What have you done?" Jesus answered, "My kingdom is none of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, then my servants would be fighting, so that I would not be handed over to the Jews. But as it is, my kingdom is none of this realm." Therefore Pilate said to him, "So you are a king?" Jesus answered, "You correctly say I'm a king. For this reason I have been born, and for this I have come into the world, to testify to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth hears my voice." Pilate said to him, "What is truth?" When he had said this, he went out again to the Jews and said to them, "I find no fault in him." Well, he said he was a king, so Pilate goes back in the house. He has to keep going outside to talk with the Jewish leaders, but he goes back in the house to talk to Jesus. We'd say back in the palace, talk with Jesus, and "Are you a king?" And he's kind of hoping I'll get an answer, and Jesus is basically saying, "I'm king of truth. I'm the king of truth." This is an odd text to put in a Christmas sermon, but every once in a while it goes into one, because why was Jesus born? To give witness to the truth. So it's a Easter text and pre-Easter text, but it could be used for a Christmas sermon. Why was I born? To give the truth. Way back in probably freshman in college, just No, I read a book on Plato. And Plato is your Greek philosopher, and he compared life to floating on a raft in a river in the dark. That's just telling us, I don't know anything. Big Greek philosopher, I'm floating on a river in the dark. I bring this in because poor Plato didn't have any New Testament. We do. So Jesus is saying, why was I born? To give the truth. King of truth. God answers. Good thing. Well, if you kind of glance down into chapter 19, then, and he beats them, try to get them to go, feel sorry for him, so let him go. And chapter 19, verse 4, I find no guilt in him. Verse 5, behold the man, he's all kind of thorns, all bleeding. Maybe they'll have some sympathy and they still want to kill him. Now, verse 7, the Jews answered him, we have a law, and by that law he ought to die because he made himself out to be the Son of God. Verse 8, therefore when Pilate heard this statement, he was even more afraid. He entered into the praetorium again, and he said to Jesus, where are you from? But Jesus gave him no answer. Pilate said to him, you do not speak to me, do you not know that I have authority to release you, I have authority to crucify you? Jesus answered, you would have no authority over me unless it had been given you from above. For this reason, he that delivered me to you, Caiaphas, has the greater sin. As a result of this, Pilate made efforts to release him, but the Jews cried out, saying, if you release this man, you are no friend of Caesar. Everyone who makes himself out to be a king opposes Caesar. I would stress the change in his personality. He says he's the Son of God, and Pilate got scared. You see, earlier, Pilate is a skeptic. This fits well. You know, some academic circles, television, be a skeptic. What is truth? Be an agnostic. And then comes out, well, the real charge is he says he's the Son of God. Now he's a little bit supernatural and mystical and afraid, and I would say right about in here, Mrs. Pilate got the note to him, I had a nightmare over this guy, and stay away from him. So sometimes people that are skeptical aren't. They get in trouble. And I think Pilate is changing here. What is truth? You're in the court. What is truth? And he gets some message from his wife. I had a nightmare last night over this guy. Stay away from him. And then he hears, well, he says he's God the Son. So he's a little bit worried about it. He still wants to let him loose. And Jesus is saying, wouldn't have any political authority at all unless God allowed it. That's true with all politicians. God doesn't cause all of them, but he doesn't always stop it either. So he either causes or allows. And so to Jesus, it's kind of like... it's not of top importance. God allowed it. And Caiaphas has the greater sin. I don't know when to stop, but Ron has one of these. You have it on today? These rings? Yeah. It's the Martin Luther ring that he gave his wife. And it's got a picture of Jesus on the cross, but right next to it is a dunce with a hat. It's supposed to be Caiaphas. Really, really in trouble, Caiaphas. Because Pilate did wrong and Caiaphas did the greater wrong. I forgot to say what all we know about Caiaphas, but he's in other books. Pilate is too, but we think we have his bones. They found a bone box and it has the most ornate ossuary ever found in Jerusalem out of the 800, and it says Caiaphas on it. And it's got the bones of somebody in their 60s in it. So, his bones are better off than his soul. Yeah, his bones are better off than his soul. he who delivered me to you has the worst sin. And Pilate, by the way, he's very well known historically. He's at least in three other books outside of the New Testament. And they're like slabs. You know, we go in a building and we'll say, built by such and such with the mayor and the city council. Well, they got slabs. They dig them up. 1961, Caesarea, Pontius Pilate, you know, helped build this building. So very historical. In trouble, but not as bad as Caiaphas. Now, they said, if you let him go, you're not a friend of Caesar. Let's read the final verses for today, verse 14. Well, it was the day of the preparation for the Passover, probably Friday. It was about the sixth hour, really early in the morning still. The trial's all done. It's 6 o'clock in the morning. I said to the Jews, behold your king. They cried out, away with him, crucify him. Pilate said to him, shall I crucify your king? The chief priest answered, we have no king but Caesar. So he handed him over to be crucified. In verse 12, we had friend of Caesar. They actually had a group called the Friends of Caesar. We would say the political action committees, that's how we say it. The friend of Caesar. It's a little bit of putting it together, but it's probably true. The head of the Praetorian Guard, we would say the head of the secret service, Sejanus, had just been convicted of trying to assassinate the emperor. Now, this Sejanus, I'm not looking for kids, but they stuffed rags down his throat, tied him up, threw him in the river. We're starting to look for all of Sejanus' friends. And Pilate was probably one of them. At the very least, Sejanus was very anti-Semitic. And so the Roman government's looking for anybody who offends the Jews. They might have been a part of this traitor. And before this, Pilate was really mean to Jewish people, without going into details. But at this point, it's like, part of it is, send Jesus over to Herod, let's try to make friends with him. And when they said, you're not a friend of Caesar, that was it. Because even though he's governor, he was in trouble. And by the way, they did eventually call him back. Before he got there, the emperor died, or he got to Rome, and we don't even know what happened to Pilate. Probably let him loose. But Pilate took political safety over doing what is right. Five judges, six trials, all crooked trials, middle of the night, private homes, don't have any evidence, just arrest the person and then we'll look for some evidence. What evidence is there? Well, he says he's the Son of God, which was not a crime. There was no crime. Are you the Christ? Are you the Son of God? Eagle of me? I certainly is. Applying it to now, though, he's still on trial. They're still going to ask, who is he? And like then, he kind of says, my followers will tell you. The musicians please come.